Welcome to The Art of Semi-Fiction. I am Robin Miller.
I'm Jane Daly.
And today we're going to kind of continue our conversation about inciting incidents. When we talked about it on a previous episode, we talked a lot about, we did slip in Cynthia Ruckte's book, which is fiction, miles from where we started there at the end. But we wanted to talk about how that also kind of works with fiction just in general. Because it's a principle that it is important no matter what you're doing. How to figure out what is the reason you're telling the story now. So what is the inciting incident? Why tell it? Why tell it now? Why tell it from this point? And that point of entry, where you enter the story, whether you're actually right in the action. So we used Susie Florey's Thunderdog. We were talking a lot about that, talking about, you know, it's a 9/11 story. There's a lot of drama inherent in that. But she chose to emotionally give us a break in how she wove in and out of the drama that unfolded in that story. And the same thing has to happen in fiction, doesn't it?
Right. I've taken a couple of Susie May Warren's workshops at writers' conferences, and she talks about the inciting incident as something that's going to happen after you lay the what she calls real life. So your life is going along, you're in the kitchen, you're cooking, you're cleaning, whatever it is that you're doing, and you know, so we get a setting. There has to be a setting, then the inciting, the phone call, the visit, the car accident.
Yes.
Something that comes along that's going to interrupt your real life.
I like that. I like that. And the fact is, my old fashioned, I guess, view of writing. I like, it's kind of like music. I like a lot of things. I like a lot of different genres. I read a lot of different authors. But one of my absolute favorite authors is Chaim Potok. He's a Jewish American author, and he wrote, a lot of books. Gift of Asher Lev, My Name is Asher Lev. The Chosen is one of my favorite books of all time. I reread it, at least every couple years. Love the book. But I also like literary fiction. So I'm thinking, when we were talking about this topic, looking at where to enter a story.
Is there an inciting incident in literary fiction?
Well, that's the thing I'm thinking. Because some people would say, you know, classical music is boring because it just doesn't, you know, have a beat. You can't dance to it kind of thing. And modern stories tend to go right into action. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with literary fiction drawing me through, you know, the moors in England for, you know, chapters and chapters of description. And I'm not in a hurry to get to the inciting incident usually when I read. So it was interesting for me when we were talking about this to go back and look at, again, one of my favorite books. You can tell how this one, I have actually a nice copy and then the one that is all like mangled because I've read it so much. And I looked and I saw, what does he do? He goes right into the first chapter. He does backstory. Mm-hmm. There are two main characters who are both Jewish boys, but one is from a more Orthodox conservative and one's a little bit more modern progressive sex. And they live very close, you know, next to each other in neighborhoods. And it goes through. I mean, it has beautiful talking about it. Danny's block was heavily populated by the followers of his father, Russian Hasidic Jews in somber garb, whose habits and frames of reference were born of the soil of the land they had abandoned. They drank tea from samovars, sipping it slowly through cubes of sugar held between their teeth. They ate the foods of their homeland, talked loudly, occasionally in Russian, most often in a Russian Yiddish, and were fierce in their loyalty to Danny's father. I mean, we're learning about these. I know, isn't that gorgeous?
That is beautiful.
Let's all take a moment.
Right there.
I just love him. And again, that's not action, is it?
No.
That's really telling backstory is what it is. And now you'd be told, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trickle that in as backstory, but modern readers don't want it. I want that, actually. I love that. And then the next chapter or next paragraph, he's talking about the other. That's the Russian Hasidic Jews, and now he's talking about another Hasidic sect. So he just goes into description. But interestingly, when these two boys end up meeting, it's on a baseball field, and one of them gets hurt. And that is actually the inciting incident. And I wouldn't have been able to, as many times as I read this book, I wouldn't have been able to tell you That's the inciting incident. That's how it all gets rolled together, because one of them hurts one of the other ones. Mm. And that's how this unlikely friendship between two boys from, even though they're both Jewish and they're both very close in proximity, and they're living very different backgrounds, very different kind of focuses on life, and yet they get thrown together because of this injury. And they form a relationship and a friendship.
Does that inciting incident happen in the first chapter?
First chapter.
Uh-huh.
End of the first chapter, one of the coaches is panicking and going to go get a cab because one of the boys needs to go get to the hospital.
Wow.
So it is so funny. Like I said, I knew that there was a baseball game and I knew there was an injury, but I wouldn't have, you know, when you're looking at writing and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't, sometimes you just go, I just love that. But when you sit down and say, why did I love that? Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you a lot of why I love Chaim Potok, because of his description, because of the riches. In one paragraph, I felt the pulse of the Hasidic Russian mm-hmm. Jews.
I was there.
It was just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful writing. It's rich and it's compact. It was a short paragraph.
He did not waste one word.
Not one word. Love Chaim Potok. But there it was. There was the inciting incident right there. But you were right. In that incident, he gave life what the real, mm-hmm. you know, what the daily state of play is between these two sex, these two Jewish sects living right next to each other. And then, which again tells us when it comes to these two boys being thrown together, you're not just going, well, they're both Jewish.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
Yeah, what's the big deal? We know that's a big deal because mm-hmm. they're two very, very, two very different cultural mm-hmm. kind of groups. And so, I went, he even did it. I was thinking that because it was more literary fiction-y kind of stuff, I thought maybe my favorite author didn't do it, but he did it. In the first chapter, we got backstory, we got the real life that you were mentioning, and then we got the inciting incident. Mm-hmm. That's the point of entry into the story, how their relationship began. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
So we know that not only is an inciting incident important when we're writing nonfiction, a narrative nonfiction, because we're taking the reader from, this is what happened to me, and let me take you on the journey.
Yeah.
But in the same way, in fiction, we have an inciting incident, what the book is about.
Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily what the book is about, but it's pointing.
Yeah.
To what the book is about.
Exactly. Well, we're setting upon a journey, aren't we? Somewhere, no matter what we're reading, we're going on a journey of some kind. Yeah. And I find it interesting too that people, when they talk about fiction, they think, it's interesting because I do, as we've talked about before, you're pretty much one foot in each genre pretty firmly. Mm-hmm. So you are pretty equal. I'm definitely leaning toward creative nonfiction, or straight nonfiction has been the bulk of my published work. And I kind of a third in fiction. So I'm definitely leaning toward the nonfiction, but I lead two writing groups and I'm a president of Inspire Christian Writers. You're on the board of Inspire Christian Writers and on the board of West Coast Christian Writers, organizations that serve writers, amazingly enough, it's in the title. But so we interact with a lot of writers and it is amazing how many people who, when you say, are you fiction? And then somebody raises their hands and how do you feel about nonfiction? And they start, you can see like sweat, you know, beads of sweat. The thought of writing nonfiction just kind of freaks them out a bit. And then the nonfiction, thinking about writing fiction, that was me. When I first thought about writing fiction, I'm like, I don't know how you people do it because it was so much more exposing to me. Whereas most people feel, all fiction writers think that nonfiction is exposing. So
I totally agree. I was going to just be a fiction author until...
And then your two traditionally published books are nonfiction.
Because
okay.
Someone made a suggestion to me and said, have you ever thought about writing about your son's death?
Ah.
And I said, well, I thought about it, but I've never actually thought that heavily about it. And he said, write it. Write the story.
Well, that's exactly that. I think I've told you. The one, if you had said, what genres are you interested in writing? I would have listed pretty much every genre there is, short of like, you know, ones that don't honor God, you know, and memoir would have been the end. I never wanted to write a memoir. I never thought about writing a memoir. In fact, I joke that when doing my master's and hearing about memoir or being at a writer's conference, I'd be kind of like, la, 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 la. I didn't want to know how to write a memoir because I didn't want to have to be called into writing a memoir. And now I've written.
And guess what?
Yeah, now I have written a memoir. But the interesting thing about it, once I kind of unpacked it all, is story is story. Mm-hmm. Whether it's true or not, whether it's fully true. Because I believe that all fiction is partial memoir. Well,
and that's why we call this the art of semi-fiction, because mm-hmm. it's there are elements of both in both.
Yes.
There's a crossover. Yeah. There's a crossover.
There's no way that you can write fiction that is completely everything made up. You take fragments of reality, fragments of your experience, either your emotional or setting or people mm-hmm. you know, and they become, like you were talking about, the novel that you're working on. Mm-hmm. One of your characters has a large chunk of his personality crafted around somebody that you knew. And I think that, so for me, and we've said this before, we'll kind of hammer this home, because a lot of people think that semi-fiction is a new term, and it isn't. Mm-hmm. And it's not a new concept.
It's definitely not a new concept.
But I think that it is important to just, for all fiction writers who are afraid of nonfiction and all nonfiction writers who are afraid of fiction, to stand up and just say we are all one in the writing world, and we all are drawing on the same truths. We're just couching it. We're just packaging it slightly differently. That's my thought on that. We both just read.
Oh boy, that was good stuff.
We read Francine Rivers' latest novel, The Masterpiece, and I loved it. I'm just going to say that I thought it was really a strong story, compelling writing.
Great characters.
Yeah.
The characters were so good.
Yeah. There was a lot to love about this book. And when we were talking about this, where to enter a story, because we both read this and we both like Francine personally as well. She's a very nice woman. We thought we'd look at it. The first chapter, the main character, who is an artist, we actually are right in backstory.
Mm-hmm.
We're just a fragment of a scene where he's doing some graffiti, mm-hmm. basically. So that was an interesting choice to enter the story there. Instead of the inciting incident is actually somebody coming to work for him as a now famous author.
Mm-hmm.
So to choose to, instead of say, you know, like have a doorbell ring, you know, and open the door, hello, you know, now our stories are going to become intertwined and we're going to have impact on each other. And that this is where the story begins. She chose to start her story by giving us a slice of his life way before the now.
Which is so different.
Yes.
So different. I will never look at graffiti or you know, public art.
Public art. I like that. Well, it was interesting, and I think that this is, I mean, one of the lessons that we can learn here is that, you know, nothing happens that doesn't have some catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
And his life was very complex and painful, and his choice of how to express himself came out in a way that another person would just say that's illegal and mm-hmm. whatever. And but it was interesting. It was a very interesting topic that she tackled. But it was an interesting point of entry too, because she could have done the throwing you right into, you know, dialogue with the person who is one of the two main characters. There are two main characters, Roman, the artist, and who is his assistant, Grace. So that's really the complexity of the story is based around their own issues and their own stories.
Well, and this is totally different from the way that Cynthia started her story, which was with dialogue, jumping into the action.
We're right in the scene.
Well, dialogue jumping in the action. This is storytelling jumping into the action, because that first chapter has plenty of action.
Yeah.
It's gripping.
But yeah, exactly. It is. I mean, our heart is pounding as he's, you know, maybe going to get, I don't know how much we're giving away, but
read the book.
Yeah. Read the book.
This won't blow it for you.
Yeah, it won't. But it's, you know, it's a heart pounding moment as he's mm-hmm. doing, you know, graffiti, and there's a potential of him getting caught and what that looks like. So you're right. There is action there. But really that's backstory, isn't mm-hmm. it? It's
It's setting the stage for the incident that's going to change everybody's life.
Yeah, and here's one of the things that you hear over and over anywhere you learn about the craft of writing. Everybody says, learn the rules and then break them intentionally to serve your story. If mm-hmm. you do something well, then you're good. Mm-hmm. You're good. Most people would say she went right into backstory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's,
you don't do that.
Yeah.
That's a huge no-no.
And the funny thing is, let me see how many pages. From 1 to 16, that's the first chapter. And from 1 to, so in those 15, 16, 17 pages, again, don't do math well. Those pages, we have backstory. We have backstory of the secondary main character. Mm-hmm. We have stakes happening. Grace has the, you know, high stakes she's got going for her. Mm-hmm. We know there's tension there. We know there's some sort of problem with Roman. We don't know what it is, but he's got some issue, and we know he's got it. We just don't know what it is. All that's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's two people's backstory, two people's kind of inciting incidents. You know, Grace needs a job badly. He keeps firing people, you know, right? So she hasn't just woven together Roman's story. Mm-hmm. She's got two main characters, and in those pages, we have a ton of action, we have dialogue, we have two people's backstory, two people's stakes, two people's, you know, trauma kind of coming to the fore. We don't know what one is. We know a little bit more about Grace's, all in that first 16 pages.
I know. That's why she's a bestselling author.
That's why she's Francine Rivers.
And award-winning.
And all that sort of thing.
All that.
But that's... If you looked at, somebody might say you should really have started this story because the story is the story of the complicated relationship and how they interact and what happens between, you know, those two people meeting each other, basically. So a lot of people say start there, start with a dialogue, start with an interaction there. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great way to do it. That would have been, again, there's not a right or wrong way.
Say there's not a right or a wrong way, or there's not a wrong place or a right place to start.
Yeah.
Your whether it's fiction or nonfiction, but you do have to know what is going to be that spark to the flame. What is that thing that's going to make everything change?
Exactly.
Otherwise you do not have a story, and you do not have a compelling story that's going to keep people.
Exactly.
Reading. Otherwise you're going to have a memoir. Sorry. I will stop interrupting you in a moment. Otherwise you're going to have a memoir like was written about, you know, what that people wrote years ago. That was, this is my life from birth to death.
Which is a biography. Autobiography.
Yeah.
It's a chronology. Well, that's one of the things. I mean, there's a lot to like about Francine's writing in general. Yeah. But one of the things that I think she does is she's very clear in what her trajectory is for her characters. Mm-hmm. She's clear when she's, and again, this doesn't mean that she sat down and wrote this as the first chapter, right? She didn't necessarily say, you know, I'm going to start here. And then she wrote chapter 2 and chapter 3 mm-hmm. and chapter 4. Writing isn't usually linear. You often write several chapters and then discover what your story is and then have to go back and rewrite the beginning. So I'm not saying she wrote this first, but when she crafted it as the first chapter, it was so clear that she knew exactly what she was going to be doing with both of those characters, mm-hmm. what each of their stakes were, because this is a little bit unique. We're not just following one character. We're really following two. And because of that, and you could almost say Grace is the main character. In fact, I think Grace is, because she's more of the story is really told with an mm-hmm. eye on her for the most part. And yet we're getting these backstory that she's not in. That is Roman. So it's an interesting way that she's chosen to do that. And I think that's an important thing when you're looking at, we talked about in the inciting incident episode, talking about, you know, there's different ways to look at that inciting incident and the stakes and all those spokes you were talking about mm-hmm. going off, choosing where on that kind of wagon wheel illustration that you have to enter
mm-hmm.
is up to your personality, your voice,
And the message that you want to convey.
Exactly.
The most recent book fiction that I read was by James Scott Bell. It was one of his Romeo series. It was Romeo's Fight. So he starts, they're very short. They're only about, I think, 55,000 words.
Wow.
So they're very quick reads. But Romeo's Fight, so you know that there's going to be a fight somewhere in it. But the inciting incident is not the fight, because the fight doesn't happen until the end. The inciting incident is somebody picking a fight with him. And so everything that happens after that is how he is trying to avoid, at all costs, fighting this guy.
Wow.
He does not want to do it. It's against everything. But at the end, he fights him. So yeah, that inciting incident, doesn't happen. It happens within, I would say within the first maybe 30 pages, but you get some backstory. You get a little bit about, because if you haven't been following the Romeo series that he's written, I think this was either 3 or 4, you're not going to know who he is.
Yeah.
You need to get a really good flavor for who this character is, because you're only going to be with him for 55,000 words.
And that's another great point. How, I mean, France, I just looked at the word count on this, and it's just under 500 words. I mean, 500 pages. Oh. 500 words. It's actually flash fiction. No, it isn't. It's a tome. It's a big, hefty book. And she knew, because she does tend to write rich, long stories. That's kind of one of, you know, that's part of her trademark and how she writes. Whereas other people, they will write tight. They'll do shorter, and a project might lend itself to one or the other, depending on the story you're serving, and all of those things are part of your voice, your perspective, your own kind of signature way of telling a story. But it also has to do with the story that you're telling. How can you best? And that's really what we need to decide as a writer. How best can we tell a story? We've talked about Jane Wytrip's words, which was a true-ish, a fictionalized version of a true-ish
event.
And we've talked about how she chose to fictionalize it because that was the best way for her to tell the story she wanted to tell. There's other times when you might need a nonfiction, you might need memoir, you might need a straight nonfiction, whatever it is, you have to decide the story you want to tell. And where you enter it and how you begin it and develop it really is, it's part of your trademark as an author, part of your voice, but it's also part of how you can tell that particular story the best way possible so that your audience can access it.
Isn't it great to know how much leeway we have as authors to carry those things into our writing, and we get to make the choice.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. This is The Art of Semi-Fiction, where we explore every corner of the written word. I am Robin Miller.
And I'm Jane Daly.
Thank you for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe.
Thank you.